We are. We'll have Tim Hasselbeck in just a moment. Chase McAvey, why don't you tell everybody about Saturday? What's going on Saturday?
It's the debut. I'm very excited about this. Chaser's Tailgate, something that we're going to be doing every week, every college football Saturday. You can join me at Brewhouse South at 1855 Galleria Boulevard in Franklin for Chaser's Tailgate. Stop by and hang with me and watch Alabama, Florida. You can enjoy beer specials and some great food. Kickoff is at 2:30. So going to have some fun with that, do some social media stuff. If you want to talk betting, we'll talk some betting. But, yeah, come hang out. It's going to be cool. We're going to be doing these at different locations every Saturday during the college football season. Well, Chaser's right. Tailgate.
That's tucked in behind the mall, right? Cool Springs Gallery?
Yeah, yeah, it's over in that area.
Right,
so
right
cool
in
spot.
The back area. Yep. Yep, really cool spot.
All right, so,
cool.
Pumped.
Sounds like fun. All right, let's bring in Tim Hasselbeck. Joins us every week on the program. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. We had a little discussion last hour. I want to get your take as a former player. And I know we've talked about this with you before, but we've talked more about it. You know, you've said, hey, for guys like me, I needed to, you know, guys that are vying for a roster spot, it's vitally important. So it's not really about is preseason important or not important. It's kind of now the second guess game. You know, the Titans come out, they look flat, they don't play any of their starters in preseason, and Arizona did. They did play some of their starters in preseason. Green Bay didn't either, and they came out and they looked flat. Kansas City played starters. Tampa Bay played all their starters. Overall, like, how do you think if everybody's upright and healthy and you're not dealing with COVID situations, like, if you were a coach, would you make sure that you got all your starters in some preseason games? Keith Bullock, also, we played the clip, was on our morning show today, and he said he comes from the school of thought, you should be playing preseason games. Like, you should have your starters out there getting reps in preseason. And he said he wasn't surprised they looked rusty. Where are you? What side of the fence are you on?
If I were a head coach, I would play them a little bit.
Okay.
So I would have them go through the routine of getting ready to play. And I would have them play some. Now, you listed off, obviously, some scenarios where guys did not, or teams did not play well. But, like, look at the Rams. You know, Matthew Stafford's on a brand-new team playing a pretty good defense, and he looked great. So, you know, it doesn't mean that it's always going to produce the result that you want. And in terms of, like, take Arizona, for example, Arizona looked horrible in the preseason at times. I mean, like, you guys know how I've been on Kyler Murray. You know, I think he's, you know, about to be a superstar, just an absolute, like, I think he can be that good because of his talent. And, you know, watching him play in the preseason, hearing his comments in the preseason about not wanting to play, like, I started getting really nervous about all of my, like, pumping up Kyler Murray talk. So, I don't think there's a perfect scenario for it. And I think for the Titans, you know, part of it is, look, their starting quarterback had COVID and it's some offensive line guys out. And so it's like, okay, well, what are we doing now? How are we playing everybody in that scenario? And so you probably have to make an assessment at that point. So maybe it did have an impact on how the team looked week one.
Any panic at all in their performance, or let's say the Packers, who Aaron Rodgers looked awful and the Packers looked awful? Any panic at all? Or is it just one game?
I think it's just one game. Remember, the Bucs looked really bad at the beginning part of last year. You know, had elements that it just was like, oh, I don't know what that team is going to look like. So it's a long season. And, you know, I think ultimately – you have a lot of time to fix things. And in fact, you have another game and you have, you know, there's more teams in the postseason than that were in the postseason, you know, 3 years ago. So I don't think that you need to panic. But I do think you need to fix stuff. And, you know, sometimes losing helps you fix things. I'll kind of give you an example and use the college game as the example. You know, I talked to I had Clemson last week, so that, you know, coming off of their loss to Georgia, and you know, and Dabo actually said to us, he's like, look, this is actually better for our football team than beating Akron 50-0, because there were things that we didn't do correctly, especially on offense, that we need to fix for when we play teams that we don't have, you know, a clear, just athletic margin over our opponent. You know, when we have it, when we're playing a team that is, you know, in similar talent to us, we've got to be good and our details have to be right. And so I think that, look, I think Arizona is a good football team. You know, they have some of the key ingredients to be really good. So, you know, I don't think it makes sense to panic, getting beaten, you know, as badly as they were beaten by the Cardinals. That being said, if you don't correct some of it, yeah, then you're in for a long year.
I painted this scenario yesterday that there's a real shot week three at Nissan Stadium. The Titans are hosting the Colts, and the loser's going to be 0-3. There is that chance. One, do you believe that the Colts are at home this week hosting the Rams and the Titans are out in Seattle taking on the Seahawks? Or do you think one of them, because both of them are underdogs, do you think one of them or both pulls off a win? How do you think that's – what do you think is going to be the scenario in week three here? Is it two 0-2 teams playing each other, or do you think somebody's getting a win this week or both are getting a win this week? How would you answer that?
I think someone's getting their first win week three.
In week three?
Mm-hmm.
So both are coming.
Yeah.
So the loser of that game is going to be 0-3, Colts or Titans?
Yeah.
But remember, some people like to think that the season's canceled.
Well, no, listen, I'm not doing that thing you did a few years ago where you're like the loser, like they, and then like literally the exact opposite thing happened. don't think I'll ever forget that. But
I know you won't.
I think that's a very real possibility. I believe the NFC West is really, really good. And I think you saw it this weekend. So, look, the Rams versus the Colts, and you know, the Colts obviously had their, you know, issues from a week ago. And, yeah, I think, look, based on what we saw from week one, I don't know that we can expect something different. And look, Seattle, look, the quarterback is really good, and they, you know, they have good receivers, and they – because of how they're coached, are always going to be competitive on defense. So, look, it's the NFL. So, look, the Colts and the Titans could go win this week, but you said they're both underdogs. I think they're both underdogs for a reason, and big part of it is how they looked week one. And so kind of back to the, you know, earlier conversation about, well, do you improve? Do you get things better? And if you do, you have a chance. If you don't, you really don't against those teams.
Urban Meyer was asked this morning, Tim, about the USC opening, and he said, quote, there's no chance. I'm going to stay here and fix this organization. Do you believe Urban Meyer?
I'm going to believe him based on timing.
Okay.
I think. You know, if we were 2.5 years into, you know, the Jacksonville rebuild, then I would be more skeptical. I think because of the newness of what he's taken on and, you know, what's happening at USC right now, I'm going to say, you know, at least not this go around.
I guess someone has already, this is just kind of breaking right now on Twitter, that on the Dan Patrick Show, that evidently James Franklin, there is mutual interest between USC and James Franklin. So where do you think ultimately that, how does that position get filled in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, so here's what I would say, like, and I think that there's been a lot of talk about this, you know, recently. And look, when the Tennessee job was open, you know, we had conversations about it.
Mm-hmm.
So James Franklin, is it easier to win at Penn State or at USC? What do you think?
It's a great question.
I think USC.
I think.
Really?
I think I Penn State. I think Penn State.
I think it's easier to win at Penn State. You know, and, you know, I just think that's, you know, so sometimes you just got to, you know, sometimes we look at these things and you're like, well, what's the better job? Like, which would you rather have? And, you know, I think I started to pay attention to it, knowing some of the opportunities that, you know, were offered to Luke Fickell at Cincinnati. And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm good here. Like, this is a good job. Like, he's making a pretty good salary, you know, by comparison to other guys that are doing what he's doing. And, you know, he knows the kind of guy he can recruit. He knows what the expectation at the school, you know, what the expectations at the school are. And, you know, I think that's a part of it. Now, let me say, I do think you can win a national championship at USC, just like I told you, you can win a national championship at Tennessee. So, you know, I think when you look at those things, they're both good jobs. But I think you do have to ask yourself, like, is that really a better one? And I'm not positive that it is, especially right now.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, and Tim, you mentioned how good the NFC West looked. So let's go out there. Let's just start with the Seahawks. A good question that was asked to Mike Vrabel was to compare Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray. Just in the, you know, they're both mobile. They both extend plays, but they do have their differences as well. So how would you answer that question?
I think Kyler is way faster. Like, way.
And that's exactly what
faster.
He said.
Like, is that what he said? Yeah. Yep. I mean, look at this weekend. I mean, it just. He's, and that's one of the reasons I think he's going to be a superstar is, you know, Lamar Jackson's normally the fastest guy in the field when he's playing a game. Well, I think the same could be said for Kyler Murray. The difference between those guys is Kyler is a significantly better passer, significantly better passer. And he's got better wide receivers than Lamar. So, you know, like defending that speed, I think is such a challenge. Now, I think that, Russell is a better passer. He's better pre-snap of seeing what the defense is doing. I mean, he's in many respects, you know, a pretty good combination of like the traditional pocket passer, good at the line of scrimmage, ability to adjust protections, things like that, along with, you know, being elusive and mobile and, you know, hurting you other ways. So, but I believe that Russell most definitely is a passer first, and I think that, you know, with Kyler, I think you could make the distinction that you're not really sure what you would have him do first.
Is it too early to get a read on Shane Waldron, the new offensive coordinator for the Seahawks? Are we going to see much differently how they go about it with all of the hubbub that you heard from Russell Wilson and the adjustments that they've made?
I don't think so. I really don't. I think you're going to see a lot of the stuff that Russell is comfortable with. And I think in many respects, it's whether you look at the changes that have happened, you know, in Pittsburgh over the years. I mean, just think about the changeovers, whether it's Bruce Arians or Todd Haley or, you know, just like various guys that have been through there calling plays in Pittsburgh. Ultimately, you know, it comes down to, well, are you doing things that the quarterback is comfortable with? And I think that's typically what you're going to see, you know, in Seattle from a passing game perspective. And then I think the head coach, because of, you know, probably his era, his age, his experience in the NFL, they're always going to make an effort to be a team that is physical with how they run the football. So I think in many respects, we're going to see a lot on the quarterback, and we're going to see them doing things that the quarterback's comfortable with.
Were the Rams as impressive as I thought that they looked? I know you were pretty high on them going in, but it just looked like the Stafford marriage with everything else, it looked like it fell right into place.
he's a difference maker. Like, you know, I think that whatever the public perception was of him as a player, I think people were like, yeah, he's pretty good. You know, like, yeah, you know, people like him. He's talented. But, like, when you saw the compensation in the trade, and then people were like, wow, that's a lot. You know, they must, you know, get out from under, you know, the golf contract, but then to add Matthew Stafford. You know, I think, or like, internally in the league, I think people thought, like, Matthew Stafford is really, really good. And so I think you're seeing the difference, right? Like, not to, I don't know, overblow one game, but you just think about two of the touchdown passes that he throws are plays that I don't really think you see Jared Goff make on a consistent basis, right? Like rolling left, throwback on a deep post, balls in the air, 47 yards, and he does it making it look easy. Like, I think things are opened up. And then, you know, this is something my brother talked a lot about on Sunday NFL Countdown was, you know, Matthew Stafford in empty, so no backs in the backfield, in shotgun, has basically the last few years been about as good as anybody in the NFL. Well, Jared Goff was terrible at it. And so it just opens up another element of what they can do offensively, you know, in LA. And I think their offense is going to be really, really good.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us from ESPN, NFL analyst, and also does work for the ACC Network. I know the Browns lost to Kansas City in a come-from-behind win by the Chiefs, but what are some things that you took away from watching the Browns? And if you're, you know, Baker Mayfield trying to get that contract, I mean, I feel like that's a game that you need to figure out a way to win, hold on to the lead. But what was your ultimate takeaway with the Browns?
See, I think Baker did enough. Now, he obviously didn't make the play, you know, coming back. But truthfully, if they, you know, if they can punt the football properly, then Baker did his job, most likely. So my takeaway from it, though, is this. You know, you hear people talk about, like, hey, you want to keep Patrick Mahomes and that offense off the field. And I think there is a ton of truth to that. But I think if you're going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs, like, you know, without kind of stating the obvious here, but stating the obvious, like, you have to outscore them. Like, I don't think you're really going to beat the Chiefs scoring 19 points, you know, scoring 21 points. I think you've got to kind of, you know, go punch for punch with them. And if you think about the score of that football game, you know, the Browns scored 29 points. Like, they scored nearly 30 points, and that's not good enough. So no matter how well you play against them, like, you have to be prepared for Kansas City to score over 30 points just because they're that talented. And if you get 12 possessions in a game, and which is, you know, I believe still the average, you know, for NFL teams in a game, and good offenses score half of the time, like, you've got to be prepared for them to score in the 30s. So I think the Browns should be really encouraged. They ran the football extremely well. The quarterback played well. The defense was disruptive enough. You just can't give them that one other opportunity, which is what they did, and which ultimately, you know, was what cost them the game. I think beating them is going to take all of those things, but you better make sure you're scoring over 30 points.
Are you buying after one game Hurts and the Eagles, or was that one game and now obviously the competition heats up going against San Francisco?
I think they're going to play tougher opponents. A diplomatic or nice way to say that. They're going to play better opponents. Yeah, but I will say this. Some people were like, I don't know that Hurts showed me enough. And, like, you guys have saw him playing college, okay? He is not the most accurate passer. But he can do more than enough as a passer. I think he's probably a little bit better as a passer than maybe he gets credit for. And defending the quarterback run game is still really hard in the NFL. Some teams just aren't good at doing it. And so I do think they are going to be, especially in that division, more competitive than I think people had them being. I mean, I think pretty much everyone I've seen picked them to be last place in that division. And look, after watching the Giants play, like, I don't think that's going to be the case necessarily. And look, the team I picked just lost their quarterback. And so, look, I do think that, you know, kind of relegating them to that fourth best team in the NFC East, you know, I don't think it'll go down that easily.
So how much do you credit the Raiders for making the plays on offense and defense and winning that game and a crazy finish? Or how much is it that the injuries were against Baltimore and Lamar didn't take care of the football? He fumbled it twice. Where do you kind of slide the chips there?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt the injuries have been a thing in Baltimore. And, you know, look, just like we were talking about, you know, the Titans in preseason and, you know, having your starting quarterback out because of illness and that type of stuff. Look, Baltimore is kind of dealing with the same stuff. So that is real. I don't think that we are seeing, you know, I don't think we just saw the Baltimore team that I expect that we will see in late October. But I also think this, like, I do think that there's a lot of talent on the Raiders. And, you know, while the quarterback's not perfect, you know, he does do some things really well, and they've surrounded him with some really good talent and, you know, whatever you want to say about John Gruden. Like, you know, he's a Super Bowl-winning coach who, you know, I think is creative offensively. And, you know, you look at the game-winning touchdown. You know, there are challenges that offense can present because the tight end's so versatile and they do have, you know, other good complementary speed. So, yeah, I hate being a prisoner to the moment after 1 week on stuff, but I think Baltimore is going to be better. But I also think that the Raiders are going to be a better team than people maybe think just because we focus so much on other teams in the AFC West.
Who do you have this week?
Oh, I got a pretty good one. I got UVA at North Carolina.
Mm.
Ooh, that is a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, the interesting thing about UVA is, you know, there are 9-point dogs in the game, but I don't think Bronco Mendenhall has ever lost to Mac Brown, even back when Bronco was coaching at BYU and Mac was at Texas. And then two games with Mac at North Carolina. And so, yeah, UVA's got a really interesting football team. They'll have four different guys take snaps from quarterback, you know, at the quarterback spot. And so, yeah, I think I'm going to have a good one.
Hmm. Interesting.
All right. Writes that down for
I knew you were, I knew, yeah. Yeah.
I saw the scribbling.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
I knew you were writing it down.
9-point dogs got your attention a little bit, didn't
yep.
it?
Yes,
yep.
It did.
Yep. I'm sure it won't be the last time we bring up UVA and North Carolina on the show the rest of the week. Thank you, Tim, for that.
Yep. Hey, and Chase just said that Venmo account is BFF, TH. Yeah.
Yep, got it. Got it.
It's on the right
way.
Over.
What is the percentage? What's the cut?
That's between
honestly,
friends.
Like with hey, listen, with Chase and I, it's like mi casa, su casa, man. You know what I mean?
That's right.
You know,
that's how it works.
It's dinner. Yeah. It's you know the next right. rounds on the yeah. next dinner's on me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, reciprocity. Okay. Come on. It's all about reciprocity.
Listen, when you're as close as we are, like you don't need to keep an account. You know, like it's just good.
Have fun at your game. Enjoy it. We'll talk to you next week.
See you, fellas.
Tim Hasselbeck. Always fun with Tim Hasselbeck. We'll come back more on the other side. By the way, we'll head out to Seattle in the final hour to learn a little bit more about the Titans' opponent. Right now, we know week one of the NFL season is over, but the season is just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. And to kick off week two, DraftKings is giving all new customers a can't-miss offer. Yes, all you have to do is bet $1 on any football game this week and receive $200 in free bets. That's instantly, no matter what. That's right, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new customers $200 in free bets instantly when all you have to do is bet $1 on any football game. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. All you have to do is download that DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that promo code 1025GAME, and you will receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's all you have to do. Remember, put in that promo code 1025GAME to get your $200 in free bets instantly. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Want to thank Tim Hasselbeck for joining us. Remember, every week he's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD products curated for life. Don't forget Silly Underdog Picks. You know our game is back. We've been entrenched in it. We'll review tomorrow. We'll be making our picks again at high noon. And you can play along with us. Get your friends. Get your family members. Get your coworkers. Play as a group. Sign up and play with us. Remember, you get three games. And all you have to do is have your team win the game outright, and then you get those points. But your team must win the game outright. It's not a game against the spread. So that's why it's called Silly Underdog Picks. And you've got a chance to win weekly prizes. So if you haven't played the first 2 weeks, we know a lot of you have, but we would like more people to play along. You can jump in at any time. And you can win a pair of tickets to a sporting event or a concert here in town. All you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com or ESPN The Game Nashville mobile app and sign up and play right now. Silly Underdogs is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. I'm really looking forward to that tomorrow. I mean, I can't wait. I'm excited.
I'm sure you are.
I'm just saying.
As you should.
Yeah.
You know, I would too. I'm excited to
see if I can go 2-0 again.
Guys, we're just trying to go 1-0 every week. You know,
I'm trying to go 2-0. That's incorrect.
2-0.
I'm trying to go 2-0.
If you get to 6-0 after 3 weeks, I'm not sure that's ever been done.
I would. You might be up for the USC job.
That's a good point.
I mean, we might lose Darren, because USC.
Darren is he could be pried away. I think USC job pays pretty well.
A little better than this.
Just maybe a little. I'm just speculating. But
Darren, no, this is what he would do. He would take the job, suck for, you know, half a season and try and get fired and get the buyout. That would be the play.
No, I would not try to get fired. But if it happens, so be it. I would not try. That's not how I'm wired.
I know.
But if it happens, then so be it. Just give him my damn money. 5 years, $25 million. Love you guys.
Later.
Come visit me in Southern California.
Later. Later, Tater. That'd be funny.
So, you know, we thought James Franklin might be using this as a ploy to get a nicer contract. Do we have the clip of what, I guess, took place a couple hours ago? Do we have that clip, Elijah? Or can we work on that clip?
Yeah,
what was said on the Dan Patrick Show that apparently there is mutual interest. Of course there is. Although, I will just say this. And this is not a knock at James Franklin. It's just getting to know him here. Okay. It's kind of like the Urban Meyer thing. Like, I don't know if I necessarily buy for sure that he isn't just using this to get more security and a longer deal and a pay raise at Penn State. If I'm just being honest. And I don't blame him for that. I'm not saying that as a knock, because as we talked about earlier, I don't fault coaches for using leverage. I mean, I think anybody should use leverage. If you have it in your favor at your job, you should use it. Doesn't make you a bad person for using leverage.
No, you should absolutely use leverage if you have it to use.
But I just don't know if he's genuine or if he's just looking for just more security at Penn State. I don't know.
I kind of feel like this is for real, though.
Really? Why?
Because I think that even though Tim made a good point, you and I both said it's easier to win at Penn State. I think Jimmy Frank also, one, likes challenges, and two, I think he's done about as much as you can do at Penn State.
But really?
Yeah. I mean,
you don't think you can win a national championship at Penn State?
I mean, there was a time where I did, but I mean, you yesterday when I brought that up, I mean, you, like, is Ohio State going away?
I think that's why I answered.
Now, with
that,
the expanded
that
playoff,
USC is a
maybe.
Better job. Just in my mind, I didn't give it a whole lot of thought. But when Tim put that out there, Tim feels like it's Penn State. But I lean towards USC because I do think the roadblock of Ohio State is a big one, where I don't really see a roadblock like that in the Pac-12. I think you can rise quick to be the top if you're clicking at USC.
That's where I was going because, okay, if UCLA is better, great. If you go and you do things right and he turns it around, you can knock them out of the way. Oregon has pretty much been unopposed in the Pac-12 for the last several years.
I don't know if anybody's been unopposed. They haven't done anything. Pac-12's been a non-factor.
Well, okay, they've been by default.
Well, the only team that's come out has been Washington, right?
Yeah.
Since the playoffs?
Right. You're right. So I think he could go out there and turn USC back into, at least in that conference, the cat daddy, and then see what happens when it comes to the playoffs. Now, to that end, with the expanded playoff, that might change things at Penn State. Because you look at, besides Ohio State, I mean, Michigan is showing no signs of returning to being Michigan. Michigan State's not very good. Nebraska hasn't been very good. I mean, what else? You know, I mean, Penn State to me, I guess, would be the closest challenger. But I think he likes being, you know, he likes being in the spotlight. And he would certainly be that in Southern California.
See, that's why I lean. I just think it's a good fit. I just think timing-wise, it's a good time. Like, he could leave Penn State and say, you know what? Penn State was in kind of a rough spot because of everything that happened.
Now, Bill O'Brien left it.
I think Bill O'Brien
pulled it out of that.
But then he bolted.
Right.
And he didn't take it to the heights that James Franklin did.
No, but
he did the dirty work. He got him out of the the darkness.
Sure.
Right. They were in the darkness. And Bill O'Brien deserves a lot of credit. I know how you like to defend Bill O'Brien, and I agree with you. I'm not overlooking what he did there. He brought them out of a really, really tough situation. But then James Franklin, to his credit, took it and got it back to where I think Paul Feinbaum put it well. It's a solid top 10, top 15 program. He's pretty consistent there. So he could leave there and say, you know what? I did a pretty good job over there. But now it's time for a new challenge. And here's USC. And I just think his thing, which we know very well, we know his thing. It will play really well at USC.
Oh, yeah.
This is just my theory.
I know.
And I know you don't agree with that, Darren, but I'm telling you, I am strong in that category.
Look, you've got to work way harder in L.A. If you think just old Jimmy Frank is going to go out there and kiss some babies and give some high fives and do what he does, work his magic, and it's going to work in L.A. and all of a sudden people are going to flock to Coliseum, I don't buy it. I think he's going to have to work. Well, I don't think you could make it work unless you're winning. I mean, Penn State, he's got what he wants. He want his frustration. He could not fill up Vanderbilt Stadium, and he doesn't have to work to fill up his new where he is right now. He will have to, yet again, he'll be back in the seat of having to beg people to come out and fill up the stadium.
Oh, I don't think so. Not if he has success. Now, of course, you know the challenge. That
LA?
Stadium is so big. Well,
L.A.?
It's an amazingly huge stadium.
You think because James Franklin tells them to come out, they're just going to be like, yeah, forget the beach, forget all the other cool things that I do out in sunny L.A., and I'm just going to come to the game because James Franklin told them to?
They have tremendous tradition there, and I think I don't know that the goal. If your goal is to fill that stadium, that's a tall order because it's a huge place. But could you get some buzz going? Did they have a lot of buzz going when they were rocking and rolling and cheating? I'll be the first to say. But they had Snoop Dogg coming to practice and Will Ferrell and all that. I think he could get some of that going. And if they have success,
no doubt,
they'll get some buzz out there. It's the best. Especially with UCLA continuing to flounder the way they have. Now, maybe that would be a game changer if they ever got their act together, but that would even make it more of a buzz in L.A. for college football.
Right, but you said it's a big place, so it's hard. Oh, well, guess what? Beaver Stadium holds 106,000, and they fill it up.
That's one of...
That's what he wants.
It's one of the if you're looking just for stadium atmosphere, there's not a whole lot better than Penn State. It's incredible.
So you're not buying that it's mutual interest. You're just buying that it's a ploy that he's trying to get more.
No. I'm not buying that. I'm just saying I don't know. I don't know if James isn't just using this, which once again I said I don't fault him because I think anybody should use leverage when you have it. I don't know if he's got an angle. Like, Franklin's always got an angle, whether it's to get his coaches a raise or a new scoreboard or whatever, a new facility, a new indoor thing. I don't know. He's always got an angle for something new and shiny, and I don't know if he's trying to get something new and shiny at Penn State, and this is his ploy to get it. I don't know that, or if he is truly ready to bounce and say, you know, I want to go try this challenge. I just don't believe, I guess we're just on different pages, Willie. I just don't believe that just because James Franklin goes out there and tells everybody, hey, you should come to the stadium. Now,
well,
it is interesting what you did say, because I will say, and you know this, Willie, he will use famous people to his advantage. There's no doubt about it. Like, I will grant you that. He will use celebrities to his advantage to get people to come, because he's going to make it cool, right? Like, because you're going to have to work. He doesn't have to work at Penn State. He's getting $106,000 there, and that's what he's always wanted, to have a stadium packed, a big, massive stadium packed with his people screaming for his players. And he has that at Penn State. He's going to have to work in L.A. There's a lot of distractions. Anybody who's ever been to L.A., to Southern California, there are lots and lots of distractions. There's lots of things to do.
And they've had a bunch of Heisman Trophy winners and national champions. And they
Joe Rexroth, you know, just pointed out Pete Carroll didn't pull it up.
I wasn't going to say anything, but Joe agrees with me. Paul Feinbaum agreed with me.
But
Mitch Light did. I just think it's – I like the fit.
Yeah,
Let
me throw something else at you that hasn't been brought up, but this is prime James Franklin, because when you're talking about the car salesman that he is, he's going from used cars on West End to, you know, a nice GM dealership in Happy Valley, and then now a Mercedes dealership out in LA. You got to up your game every time. What stops him from going in and saying, you know what I want to do? I want to play some games at SoFi. Got this beautiful state-of-the-art stadium here. Let's call up Stan Kroenke and see if we can make that happen. You think he hasn't thought about that?
Well, yeah, but it's a home for two NFL teams. You think they can do you think that they're willing to promise him home games when they have to be the home for two NFL teams?
Of course.
Jerry's World has games all the time, the day before a Cowboys game.
They
don't host two NFL teams. They host one.
But okay.
What's the big deal?
You're playing on Saturday on turf.
Yeah.
Like you're just.
And I don't know if they would do that. Like, you have the Rose Bowl, you have L.A. Coliseum. Those are real traditional places. You'd have to work on that. But I do think you'd have creative ideas going from James Franklin. That's always something he brings to the table, that he's going to think outside the box. He's going to go in there immediately and say, how do I get this thing going? This is USC. This program needs a little shot in the arm. How do I do that? I'm just the guy. You know that he will have a list of ideas, whether that's on there or not. You know he's going to have pages of them.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of them. I mean, because listen, the Coliseum, yes, it's historic and it's got tradition, but I mean, they're thinking of creative ways to do stuff. They're about to run a NASCAR race inside of it. I mean, so like they're trying to do different things there, and it's old, and you know, I've never been there, but I've heard it's definitely not SoFi, and I'm not saying play every game there, but I'm sure
if he wanted to
play USC UCLA at SoFi.
Yeah, or bring a team from the SEC out there and play, or bring bring Michigan out there or something like that. You know,
do a big marquee game.
The Alliance, utilize the Alliance.
That's a great idea. But
think James Franklin's going to schedule Willie? You think about the private meetings we've had at James Franklin's office. You think James Franklin? You remember some of the things we discussed?
Of course,
he's scheduling an SEC team.
Yes, he's coaching.
Really? Really?
Well, I don't think he's coaching. Now, when I think about it, it's not an SEC team. It'll be from the Alliance. It'll be from the Big Ten.
The Alliance.
Or the ACC.
The new friends. Everybody, the new friend group.
That is part of the idea. Is you create,
I mean, Penn State you create is playing
games
Auburn.
That create you create games that have big TV ratings. He's going to have to get online with that, and he'll have a little easier time doing that at USC than he did at Vanderbilt.
Jason, I don't know this, but I did, you know, because I have thought about that, and I'm wondering, was that something that, you know, was been on the books for a long time, and they're like, hey man, we're not breaking that contract, like you have to play that, or did that actually happen on his watch?
Because
so against games like that, and I get it, Vanderbilt is different than Penn State, but he was so against. I mean, he literally wanted to play a high school team out of conference when he was at Vanderbilt.
What was his first year there? 2012.
2011. 11, 12, and 13. Those were his 3 years.
No, I'm talking about at Penn State. Sorry.
What was his first year was 14.
14? All right. Penn State schedule in 2014 fit that mold. You are 100% correct. Temple was on the schedule.
Philadelphia Community College.
UMass. Akron. UCF.
Ozark.
ITT Tech.
ITT Tech.
John the Baptist.
Yeah, they were on there. Yeah. Now, 2019, Idaho, Buffalo. No marquee, nothing. Out of conference, nope. Nothing there. Auburn. I mentioned Auburn this year. Let's look at next year because there are ways to do that. They play at Auburn. They go on the road at Auburn.
So it sounds like this was something that's been home on the books for a good while.
Right,
good
but we don't life. Know. I mean, he's been there since 14, so
right,
you would
and you've listed he's done exactly the model that I said. He plays Cupcake City out
20,
of conference.
Yep, 2023, West Virginia, Delaware, they're on the schedule. UMass, once again, the Minutemen. 2024, at West Virginia, Bowling Green, Kent State.
Sounds like James inherited West Virginia and Auburn when he took that job. That's what it sounds like.
2025, Nevada, Villanova.
Yeah, there's a James schedule.
Hey, oh, yeah. Jay Wright. Should have a good team that year.
Jay Wright. Is he still there then?
Yeah, Raleigh Massimino. I think he's going to have a good recruiting class that year.
2026, Marshall at Temple, San Jose State.
Yeah, there's James' schedule right there.
And then finally,
that's a James Franklin.
2027, Delaware returns and Temple.
Yeah,
returns.
That's right. That's right. So, in other words, I think he inherited West Virginia and Auburn. James, we love you. Want you to be our coach. Like, we're not going to break those contracts. We need you to play West Virginia and Auburn way down the road. Okay. Go Penn State.
I think
we'll try and go 1-0.
He did say to us, plays. I vividly remember you and I being in that office, Darren, when we had this spirited debate. And he said it is different when you're trying to win a national championship.
Yep.
If you're trying to win a national championship, then strength of schedule, especially your out-of-conference strength of schedule, is an important component. At Vanderbilt at the time, he said, we're trying to win football games. We're trying to build a program. We need momentum. We've got to get W's. And he didn't apologize for it. And that's all right. But
you were in his camp for sure, 100%.
I was, and I think for Clark Lee, a similar strategy would be smart as he builds. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he's going to have to build from even further down than James Franklin did when he inherited, because at least James Franklin inherited Zach Stacy and Jordan Matthews and some pretty good players. But that's not the case for Clark Lee. But for Penn State and for USC, the name of the game is you're trying to get to the playoffs, so you better have at least one pretty darn good non-conference opponent. Now, that's probably all you need.
Yeah. Ryan.
You need one good one.
Ryan Porth texts us and says Penn State Auburn was scheduled in 2016, so it was on his watch.
Because I think by then the goal for Penn State is, because he's just missed once or twice. You know, he's been within a game or a vote of making it. That year they beat Ohio State, they had an argument of getting in.
But was that the year they lost to Pitt?
Oh, I forget. But I think they finished number 5 in the voting 1 year. So he's got them on the cusp of getting there. It just hasn't been able to. And most years, if not, he's between 10 and 15.
when they scheduled that in 2016, he must have already thought he would beat USC by now.
He probably figured, you know what, either we're going to be really good or I'm going to be out of here by the time we play that game.
I laugh, but I think there's probably some truth to that.
Probably not wrong.
Back to wrap up the third hour next. We'll head out to Seattle here coming up to start the fourth and final hour of the program. I was looking at some projections of people already, some outlets like ESPN and USA Today and CBS Sports, College Football News, Action Network. They were kind of projecting, as we sit here, what, on September 15th, who would be coming to the Transperfect Music City Bowl. You want to hear a couple of those just for fun, just for giggles?
Yeah, sure. Just for stuff and giggles?
Just for stuff and giggles. How about Michigan versus Arkansas?
Good crowd.
Interesting.
I would hope so.
Well,
I think that would be a really good crowd.
It'd be a good year to catch Arkansas because they haven't had so much success. And so any bowl game, there'll be some enthusiasm.
Yeah. CBS Sports, that was ESPN. One outlet or one person at ESPN put in CBS Sports, Michigan and Kentucky.
I mean, I Michigan
again,
would.
Again, that would draw. It would draw for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Kentucky's not a stranger to here.
No.
Obviously.
I don't think really. At this point, when you've been around for 2+ decades, it's going to be hard to find strangers, right? College Football News, Tennessee, Purdue. Purdue. Mark Schlabaugh at ESPN said, you know, talking about no stranger, Minnesota versus Ole Miss. Minnesota definitely has been here in the past. They don't bring very many people.
No.
Has Ole Miss played in a
– Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They Eli Manning the, yep. made his debut.
That's I mean, right.
He made
yeah.
his debut, basically.
You're right.
He was USA not the starter. Today. He was not the starter. Not the starter. He came
well,
in
were,
for
–
I'm trying to
way
remember
behind.
The guy. Was the guy named Roman? What was the – Ole Miss had a good upperclassman quarterback. Hasselbeck, quarterback. What was the guy's name?
They were way behind, and Eli came back and almost yeah. brought him back to win.
And it was the odd transition between Tommy Tuberville going out and David Cutcliffe coming in. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it? Or am I remembering that wrong?
I think that's right. I think that's right, because didn't David Cutcliffe was there for Eli Manning, right?
Oh, well, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I'm just remember. I feel like, was there a coaching, or was that Tuberville? Remember, Tuberville ended up bouncing around to several different, he was at Ole Miss and at Auburn. He left Ole Miss Tubbs to go to Auburn?
He never coached Eli. I don't think. I think it was all
Cutcliffe. Because it would make sense, Cutcliffe recruiting Eli, that was certainly a big, but. So Cutcliffe
took over in 1998. So 98 to 2004.
Okay, so Cutcliffe was the coach.
Yeah.
So who was the guy? Who was his quarterback that Eli came in
not
for?
Not going to get it.
Oh, well, I'm not
going to get it. LSU versus Michigan State. USA Today.
Good.
And finally, Indiana versus Missouri. I don't think that would draw very well. I don't think.
There's much better ones on that list.
Yeah. I think Michigan, Arkansas, and Michigan, Kentucky probably would draw those two would draw the best, I think. I'm pretty sure. Although Tennessee, Purdue would do well.
Willie, you're thinking of Romaro Miller.
That
I believe.
Yeah, I was thinking Roman. Romaro Miller. Yeah.
Sure. Right on the tip.
Romaro Miller.
Not Jim Weatherly.
No.
Or Glenn Griffin.
All right, we'll come back. We'll learn a little bit more about this opponent.
John Forcade.
Where is Carlos Dunlap? We'll talk about the Seahawks, the Titans' next opponent. We do that to start the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.